You're listening to a 95BFM podcast.
In a referendum in the weekend, Turkey chose to grant President Recep Tayyip Erdogan sweeping new powers. The country's long-standing parliamentary system has been abolished in favour of an executive presidency, which will merge the roles of the president and the prime minister and could potentially keep Erdogan in office until 2029. This morning, I spoke to Stephen Hoadley from the University of Auckland's Political Studies Department about the significance and meaning of the move.
Well, it means that the power will be centralized in Turkey to a much greater extent than before. It has been, of course, previously run by the Ottoman Empire and very centralized power system. So in some respects, Turkey is going back to its historical roots. For those of us in democratic countries in the West, this is dismaying. We feel that power should be more dispersed, pluralism, and open government should be the rule. And so we feel that somehow Turkey is moving backwards.
And so what new powers does Erdogan have?
Well, he at the moment, he has powers as prime minister. There is a titular president, much like the monarch in Great Britain, for example. The real power rests in the hands of the prime minister, who is Erdogan. But in, I think, 2019, when the new system comes fully into place, he will have enormous powers. He can appoint top public officials. He can appoint his vice presidents. He can intervene in the judiciary and appoint the chief justices. He can impose a state of emergency and then issue laws by decree rather than going through the parliament or through the assembly. So we feel that although these are all the powers that the U.S. president has, but they're much more benign because the U.S. president is checked very strongly by a Congress that cannot be dismissed and a judiciary that has on many occasions ruled presidential decisions unconstitutional, so that Turkey has all the features of the American system, but it's all the bad features and not all the good ones as well.
And so critics of the move are saying it turns Erdogan into essentially a dictator. Is this an overreaction?
It's hard to avoid strong words like dictator. Certainly authoritarian is the word we use in political studies, that something in between democracy and totalitarianism. So he will definitely be an authoritarian leader with great powers. He's already exercised them as prime minister. He's imprisoned 10,000 people. He has dismissed enormous numbers of journalists, teachers, military officers, and so forth as a result of the attempted coup last year. So, and he's curbed the press. There's very few newspapers or opposition parties that dare speak out. There are a few, and they're reported in the Western press. But Erdogan regards the West as misguided, and he's called the West a crusader mentality. Now, that's pretty extraordinary because they use the word crusader, means he's invoking the Crusades, meaning the attack by the Christians on the Muslim world in the Middle East. Now, that's a very inflammatory characterization of legitimate Western criticism of his extraordinary powers.
Mm. I mean, it's been a rough time politically, I mean, for Turkey in recent years, though. I mean, for one, as you mentioned, the failed coup last year. Do you think supporters see the change as bringing, I mean, more stability to Turkey?
Oh, yes. His supporters are in favor of it. 51% voted yes for the new constitution. They celebrate stability. They like the idea that a strong leader will restore not only financial growth, but also curb the Kurds. A fifth of the population are Kurdish, not Turkish, and some of those Kurds are in open revolt through the PKK, the Kurdish, what is called a terrorist organization. And this complicates the rule from Ankara. Interesting that the vote went as follows. The three biggest cities in Turkey, including Istanbul, all voted no. These are liberal cities. These are more cosmopolitan areas. The voters, 49% of them, said, no, we don't want more powers in Erdogan's hands. It was the rural areas that voted yes by 51%. So it illustrates the split in Turkey between the more liberal cities and the more conservative countryside. The cities are more secular, the countryside is more Islamic, and then, of course, there's the complicating factor of the Kurds. Naturally, the Kurds would all vote no because they don't want greater powers to suppress their legitimate aspirations for some sort of autonomy and recognition.
Mm. And so I guess this is very clear evidence of a fractured Turkey, right?
Very fractured. It's a worry. If we look at the foreign policy aspect, Turkey is an anchor point of the NATO alliance. The United States has a large Air Force facility in Turkey at Incirlik Air Force Base, from which they can launch attacks on the Syrian Islamic State. The NATO alliance is under some strain now, with differences on how to deal with Russia. There's some fear that the Turks and the Russians will make common cause, both of them skeptical of the liberal West of Western Europe and the United States, for example, and that this will create a shift in the balance of power. There's also the question of what happens in Syria. The Turks have moved their troops into Syria, ostensibly to fight the Islamic State, but in fact they're fighting the Kurds. The Kurds are very effective fighters. They're fighting the Islamic State, and Turkey is working at cross purposes with the Western alliance that is based in Baghdad, of which New Zealand is a part, and that the Turks are playing in some respects a spoiler role. They're diverting attention from the real issue, which is the Islamic State, and causing some confusion about what their purposes are. But nevertheless, they are one of the several outside powers now operating. They say they have a legitimate reason. They've got 3 million Syrian refugees have fled north from the fighting, and they're all now in Turkey. So the Turks say, look, we have a stake in this. We want peace. We want stability because, look, we're the largest refugee host in the world at this particular point in time. So the Turks do have a point of view that their southern border is vulnerable. The refugee flows, the various attacks, the terrorist attacks in Istanbul and Ankara themselves have galvanized the Turks and made them very concerned about their own physical security against terrorism.
And so you think that this change will impact Turkey's position internationally then?
Yes, it certainly will. One of Erdogan's policies is to reintroduce the death penalty. Now, when Turkey was negotiating with the European Union, the European Union said, look, to the Turks, if you have a democratic system with proper human rights and eliminate the death penalty, which, of course, is totally eliminated in the European Union, we can consider your membership. There are a number of other factors as well, but the Turks did reform, they did democratize, they did reduce the influence of Islam and the military on both sides of the political spectrum in the political system. And the European Union gave Turkey a pretty good rating in terms of fulfilling the democratic criteria that the Europeans think are important. Well, now Turkey is moving backwards, curbing the press, curbing opposition parties, their political prisoners, and of course the death penalty would make it impossible for the Europeans to accept Turkey as a member of the European Union. Mm. So the possibilities that there's a bit of a fracture there, and the Turks may look for allies and friends elsewhere outside of Europe, and Russia is one possibility. And it means that the possibility of a ever greater European Union is more impossible, less feasible than ever before.
So is this move Turkey becoming less and less secular?
Yes, Erdogan is the head of a party called the Justice and Development Party. He has introduced more Islamic practices, approving the use of headscarves, for example, and is moving the country much more strongly in an Islamic direction. He regards Turkey as the natural leader of the Islamic world. Well, there are a lot of natural leaders, so there's a lot of competition out there, but Turkey wants to be one of them, along with Iran and Saudi Arabia and Egypt. And so we do see a trend, a very strong trend, to Islamic observations, Islamic holidays, Islamic customs are coming back in at the official level. They've always been there at the unofficial level, particularly in the countryside. But this again reverses a trend that was begun by Kemal Ataturk the founder of modern Turkey in 1922, who secularized the country. And in the West, Turkey was a poster child. So Turkey was an example of how you can have Islam and democracy together. And this is what the West wants. Well, it looks like that maybe Islam and democracy in Turkey are not so compatible under Erdogan's interpretation. And this is a great disappointment, who saw in Turkey a shining example of how Western democracy could coexist with the Islamic world.
You're tuned into The Wire. That was a 95BFM podcast. To hear more, head to 95BFM.com/bcasts.